All right, it's Wednesday, December 13th, Wednesday night group. We're doing inyanim pertaining to Hanukkah in the Sefer Harei Kedem. Simon Beis, the Rambam Sham, he started analyzing the Rambam in the section on Hanukkah. He quotes, "V'tzar lahem liYisrael ma'od," because the Rambam, as we said last week, the Rambam sees fit, which is very unusual, to give the a brief synopsis of the history. It's also interesting, you could learn how to summarize, how to give the essence of history. Because the history books that we read are, you know, overloaded with facts and information. Unless you have a good history writer that knows, I mean, that's the art, in my opinion, to keep the story moving. Not too sparse, because you want, you know, the basic information. But in many of them, it's either too little information, but more than that, I think, you know, you guys probably got turned off from history in school, because it's like, you know, knowing every little detail, every piece of information, and then there's no bigger picture. Anyways, so the Rambam says, "V'tzar lahem liYisrael ma'od." Everything that he's telling us is a vital piece of information about the Hanukkah story, so that, they, you know, it became very afflicted, you know, that's how they afflicted the Jews, you know, like in a physical way. V'nira kavaras haRambam al pima de isa b'gemara b'psachim gavei mitzvahs halel. So, of course, he's trying to understand what's the point of the Rambam in mentioning this. Quoting Neviim shebeinehem tiknu lehem liYisrael, that the Nevi'im ordained for the Jews, Sheyu Omrim Oso, that they should say Hallel. Al kol perik uperik, v'al kol tzar v'tzar, shelo tavo aleihem. In other words, Hallel essentially exists for situations in which the Jews find themselves in grave danger, and then redemption. You need both factors. The fact that they experienced a great suffering or danger, and then the geula. So ukeshenigalin omer moso al geulasan, and when they're redeemed, because it's essentially shevach vaydei Hashem, it's praise to God. So when they're redeemed from some tremendous suffering, they have to recite it for their geula. Okay, all right, fine. V'harei mitzvahs Chanukah hi b'chdei lahodos Hashem. So the whole essence of Chanukah is hodaya and shevach Hashem pirsumei nisa. Okay. I mean, it's not pirsumei nisa in and of itself. It's for a purpose. The reason why you're mefarsem the nes is because you want people to draw people's attention to Hashem's existence and His compassion and His relationship with Klal Yisrael, and to give praise. It's hard to imagine that there's pirsumei nisa without praise. It just doesn't make any sense. V'chein din hadlakas haneros. Hukiyim shall halal vahoda. Now that's an interesting statement. He says that the halacha of lighting the candles is a kiyim of halal and hoda. That has to be explained. Well, what do you mean it's a kiyim of halal and hoda? But let me just finish the paragraph. V'zeh shakasav haRambam v'tzar lahem. So he's saying that's why the Rambam wrote v'tzar lahem. The Hamachayiv shall Amiras HaHalel who kishenigolin min hatzara. That the Machayiv of saying Halel is the fact that they were redeemed from Hatzara, so they have to stop. Hatzara lehamahod. I mean, Scott, I imagine he does use the word ma'od. So let's analyze that. Why didn't he simply say Hatzara leham liYisrael? Why does he have to add the word ma'od? Now, I'm not being picayune, because we know, I mean, that's our approach with the Rambam. We darsh in every word. He's not just talking in general terms. He's talking in a very specific language that I don't think he created that language. That language is part of the Torah. That's what enables us to darsh in the Torah itself, every word. When we learn Chumash, Tanakh, and the same is true in the Gemara. That's the language of Torah. The language of Torah is a language that lends itself to darshaning every word. Now, I don't mean that every person today who writes a sefer about halacha that that's necessarily the case. Okay, because it's in the nature he wants to explain it to an audience. So, and also he may not be on that level. to write a sefer which can be approached that way demands that the person be on an extremely high level of learning and teaching in a manner that he doesn't use any excessive words, and every word that he uses is meant to convey an idea. If you have a writing like that, then you can analyze it the way we analyze it. But obviously that does not apply to every modern writer. But it does apply certainly to the Rambam, and you'll find other Rishonim. Tosfos. I mean, Tosfos, we wish he'd be a little bit more verbose in general. Very, very brief. So I think then that's a good question. Why didn't he simply say "V'tzar l'chem Yisrael"? Why did he add the word "ma'od"? I would say as follows: we have this concept, for example, in the Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Maschol Bignos U'Masayim B'Shevach, and that is that the order, the correct order, is to begin with the degradation, to describe the degradation. That's brought down in the Gemara. That's how you have to do it. Now, what's the reason for that? Is because the praise is commensurate with the degradation, or with the suffer, with the nature of the suffering. So, in order to use the term geula, in order for there to be a redemption, so there has to be a situation that calls for redemption. Now, I know today everybody wants to, you know, that's just the trend in the society. Every group wants to claim that they're being persecuted and victimization. And you see that with the Palestinians or the Arabs in general, in spite of the fact that that they get treated better by Israel than anybody else, than the Arab states. Certainly the Arabs that live in Israel, but even the Arabs on the West Bank. You know, Israel, when they have no choice because they're rioting and killing, in spite of everything with the suicide bombings and everything, I mean, Israel is very benign. But they try to make it like this is a genocide with the extreme exaggeration. Extreme exaggeration of the plight that they're in. So that's the, because if the people knew the reality, the truth of it, then they'd have no sympathy for them, which they shouldn't have. No one should have sympathy for them because they bring whatever they're suffering, they bring it on themselves. But in order to warrant a geula, like I asked the question when I took up the subject, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that shiur, about Moshe Rabbeinu. And, you know, there's two stories, basically, about Moshe before he becomes, you know, the leader. One is where both are similar. One is when he intervenes to save the Jew who's being beaten by the Egyptian, right? And he saved him. And then there's the story of the daughters of Yisro who were chased away by the shepherds. And Moshe intervenes to save them too, and then he waters the sheep. So I gave shiur on that. And I asked a number of questions. But pertaining to this, I'm not going to go over that shiur now. If you haven't heard it and you want me to give it over one day, we're entering Shmos pretty soon, so I could do it. But right now, one of the questions I raised was, I mean, it's a nice thing that he's such a big hero and he intervenes to help the oppressed, but did it make sense? I mean, we're supposed to learn from that. In the first instance, it makes sense because there was a Jew. It keeps mentioning his brother. He saw that an Egyptian was makeh, was hitting an ish ivri, me'echav. So it mentions the word me'echav twice. So, okay, that's an important point. That Moshe did not negate the achva that existed between him and the Jews. Even though he was saved from their plight, he could have ignored it. He could have been a leader, a prince of Egypt. But we understand why he did it. Because essentially he had no choice. A person's life was at stake. You want to put it in halachic terms, that there was a case of a rodef. The Jew was a nirdaf. I'm not saying that Moshe was operating according to the halachic, you know, situation of today, but it's not a stretch to say that the basic concept. I mean, there are those who take it literally, that the through Nevuah, they knew the laws of the Torah and they kept them. Whatever you want to say. But I could see it because obviously Moshe Rabbeinu knew how to fight. Okay, the Torah doesn't tell you that, but from the fact that he intervened and he knew how to fight and kill the Egyptian, he obviously had mastered, you know, the arts of combat. And, all right, so there's always a risk, but apparently he knew what he was doing. I mean, the risk really resided in the fact that he'd be found out, which in point of fact is what happened. But why did he do the same thing for the daughters? They weren't at risk in terms of, no one was threatening to kill them. Basically, these shepherds drove them off. They drew water, and they stole their water. So they drove them off. They wanted to take their water. And then what would have happened is that the girls would have to come back and then do it over again. So there's two factors that are different in this case. First of all, it's much more dangerous. Because anytime you take on like a group or a gang, that's what, one-on-one is one thing. If you know what you're doing, so one-on-one is one thing. But if anytime you take on a group, it's extremely dangerous. Because one guy gets behind you, he can throw a rock at you, whatever the case may be. It's much, much more dangerous. And secondly, what's the tzara? What's the tzara? It's not like... in other words, is that what we're learning from here? That every time, yeah, you should intervene in any type of an injustice? And especially where it's very dangerous? Yet the pasuk says, "Vayakam Moshe vayoshion," and Moshe stood up and vayoshion, he saved them. That's a very strong term, like a Yeshua. So that was one of my questions. Where's the Yeshua? They weren't being afflicted. Yeah, they were being picked on and so on and so forth. But it doesn't seem to warrant risking your life for that. Okay, those were my questions. So if you bring me back to it. Sometime another Wednesday night, maybe I'll go through the area. And the other questions I had on that so-called sugya. All right? Unless you may have heard this, because it was recorded. But that's the point that I wanted to make, that in order for it to warrant to be termed a geula, then the oppression has to reach a certain level. Like, you know, Americans, Jews, may experience some anti-Semitism from time to time, but nobody would put it in the category that, you know, we're victimized. And, I mean, what a Jew? Well, now there isn't hardly any anti-Semitism on the overt level. Even when Trump first came into office, so there was this business, they were like desecrating Jewish cemeteries. But the whole country responded, you know, condemning it, and Goyim would join together and help them clean up the cemeteries. So whatever, if it's a minor kind of thing, then it doesn't warrant. That's not a true geula. I mean, that's life. You know? So sometimes in life you suffer some setbacks, this and that. But in order for it to be considered, that's why it's maschil b'gnus. You have to first describe the plight of the Jews, how terrible it was, how impactful it was, how hopeless it was. And still, Hashem came in and saved us. That's a geula. So that's why he says, "V'tzar l'ham Yisrael ma'od," that the Jews were in a state of Syria. It was significant. It was a lot. It wasn't just a minor, you know, a minor type of oppression. You could have a minor oppression, you know, severe taxation and this and that, but it's not... It doesn't reach the level where it requires geula. Okay, well, now the other statement that he makes is that the hadlakas haneris is a kiyum of hal and hoda. How's that? How is that the case? So let me say over, Rabbi Chait he didn't take up this Harei Kedem, but the shiur today was very interesting. It pertained to Hanukkah. And what I'm saying is connected to this. Okay, he didn't say it for that intention, but now thinking back in retrospect, and I think you'd probably appreciate it anyways, you'd like the ideas. So basically, he was going through the Ran on that the inyan of Kafsa Zakakla. So we pass from Kafsa Ein Zakakla. It's a machlokus, which means if the light went out, you lit the Hanukkah light and it went out, you have to relight it. Okay? So one man the Yama says you have to relight it. We paskin like the other one who says that you don't have to relight it because you fulfill the mitzvah. Because the and he quoted the Rav in terms of that the Rav gave the Svara, is that the basic mitzvah is to create a ne'er shall pierce him. So once you created the ne'er shall pierce him, which means to say, even though we say kafsa zakakla, that is, it burned the minute, and then it went out. Now it went out accidentally. That's a key factor. If it went out due to intrinsic causes, because it wasn't designed to last, then you have to relight it. Okay. Now the reason for that is because then it doesn't qualify as an ne'er. In other words, in point of fact, if it burned for a minute and then it went out, you're yotze. But nevertheless, it must contain sufficient oil or wax, whatever it is, that it can burn for the full shear. Let's say it's a half hour, whatever. Some say it's more today because, you know, it's by the window for the outside. Whatever you want to say. Whatever you want to say. Let's use the half hour. So, but if you only had enough oil for 15 minutes, then it's not good. Even though we say that if it burns for 1 minute, you fulfilled the mitzvah, and then it went out. What's the reason for that distinction? Exactly. The answer is because your obligation is to create a ne'er shel pirsum, and in order for it to be a ne'er shel pirsum, it has to have certain characteristics, one of which is that it has the capacity to go for a half hour. So, now once you lit it, it doesn't actually have to be mafarsim for a half hour. Your obligation is just to create the entity which has the ability to do that. Okay. So therefore, that's how we paskin. That, the other side held, you actually have to facilitate the pirsum. You have to achieve the pirsum. So if it went out, you didn't achieve it, so you have to relight it. But, but we don't paskin that way. All right, so now it's brought down that if it does go out, then he doesn't have to relight it. But in Ba, if he wants to, he can. And if he wants to, and he relights it, then he doesn't make a bracha. Okay, he doesn't make a bracha because it will be a bracha levatela because he already fulfilled the mitzvah. But you know, if he wants to be Mekayim the Pirsumini, so he could do so. So then it's brought down that, and so the case would be where it went out because of some unexpected cause. In other words, if you put it in a place where there's a fan going, so of course it's going to go out. So in that case, you aren't Yotzei the mitzvah altogether, because that's not an air shall pierce him. So it means that a wind came along unexpectedly, or whatever it is, or somebody walked by and generated a breeze, whatever the case is, it went out due to accidental circumstances. So therefore, it's not your fault. You fulfilled your mitzvah. Then he mentions that, and if you did a b'shogeg, you know, you wanted to straighten something out or whatever, but b'shogeg, you put it out, so that's the same thing. So if a person did a b'shogeg, it's considered to be the same thing. And therefore, he doesn't have to relight it. But if he wants to relight it, he relights it without a bracha. Okay. So then the question came up, what if he puts it out b'mezid? If he puts it out b'mezid. So if he puts it out b'mezid, then everybody says that he has to light it over again. But it's a machlokus, whether he, one side says he has to light it over again and he makes a bracha. This is among the Achronim. I forget who the Prima Gadim, I forget who the other Mandi Amar is. And so one side said, both agree that he has to light it over again. But it's a machlokus whether he has to make a bracha or not. So basically the question, I mean, I had this question, everybody had, it wasn't just me. And that was the question, you know, that Rabbi Chaim wanted to address, is that Mamarashach. That well, two questions. One is manavshach. If you're telling me that he has to light it over again, that would be tantamount to saying that he's not he wasn't yotze. And if that's the case, he should have to make a bracha. What's this idea? It's very, very, you know, the position that maintains you must light it over again. It's not voluntary. You must light it over again, but you don't make a bracha. That would seem to be contradictory. Okay, but then there's another question. And that is, according to the Rav Svara, that the reason why Kafsa Ein Zakak La, the reason why you don't have to relight it, is because you fulfilled your mitzvah as soon as you lit it the first time. Because you created an Ershel Pearson. So if that's, and therefore if it went out, so then, you're Yotze. So if that's the case, what difference does it make if it went out because of a show gig or you did it intentionally? If you did it for mazid, for whatever reason, you put it out. You didn't want to waste the oil, whatever the case may be. But why don't we say that at the time you lit it, then it's how you fulfilled your mitzvah, it's an Ershel Pearson. Why should mazid be different than show gig or any accident? First way that he explained it was that it can't be defined as an Ershel Pearson. Because if that's the situation, that you're the type of person that is going to just decide to put it out, so then, even at the time you lit it, even if that wasn't your intention, but we see after, in other words, it sort of reflects, the fact that you put it out sort of reflects on the nature of the phenomenon itself, and therefore it wasn't the initial person, it wasn't designed to last the entire time. In other words, it would be akin to a defect in the nair. Because the person who's lighting it, I mean, this is my word, if you're flighty and you could just, I mean, it makes sense, because if you're a person that lights it is serious, and there's a commitment involved. And that commitment is that you created an Ershel Pearson, so that's, you're committed to that. Okay, now, it could happen by accident. If an accident occurs, it doesn't reflect on your commitment. These are my words. I'm taking what I heard and I'm just saying it over in a way that makes sense to me. It doesn't reflect on your commitment. But if you're the kind of person that just can't make a commitment, so that, you know, you say one thing, I'm going to do an Ershel Pearson, and then 20 minutes later, you get a bug and then you put it out, so then it was never an Ershel Pearson in the first place. See, now, according to that Svara, so halachically speaking, I mean, assuming the guy does tshuva now, he wants to say he's mechuyev, because you never did the mitzvah in the first place. So therefore, if that's the case, then you weren't yotzei, and you'd have to make a bracha. And you'd have to make a bracha. The question is, however, that what about the other side? That says you have to, and I think it's the Prima Gadim, who says you have to light it over again, but you don't make a bracha, which would seem to be a contradiction. Because you have to light it over again because you didn't fulfill the mitzvah. So then why don't you make a bracha? What's the difference? The other side was that there's two things. I mean that he has to create an Ershel Pearson. It's not just the din in the chafza, but it's the din in the gavra, that the gavra has to be mefarsem the neis. And if he puts it out intentionally, so then he's being mevatel to Pearson. So if he's being mevatel to Pearson, so then there's no Pearson at all, because he's not a gavra who wants to be mefarsing. So then lechatchila, when he lit it, it wasn't an Ershel Pearson, because an Ershel Pearson has to be dependent upon, that's the purpose of the nair, that's the intention of the gavra. In fact, what the Rav said over here was that not only that, but he has to know what he's lighting it for. Why he's lighting and what he's lighting about. Okay? That's the side that you remember, Daniel, right?
Yeah.
So now the issue, however, so therefore, Lechor, according to that, someone by the holds that he has to make the bracha. Because he wasn't Yotze the first time. The question is, what would be the svara of the Mandiyama who holds that he doesn't make the bracha? With this concept. That the putting out, deliberately putting out the nair disqualifies you as a gavra shel pirsum. And therefore, the entire nair was never a nair shel pirsum in the first place. So therefore, you have to light it over again. But what svara could you adduce to justify the fact that you don't make the bracha? Because it would seem that the two go hand in hand. If you weren't Yotze, you're mechuyev to do it again, and if you have to do it again, you have to make the bracha. In fact, the first bracha was a bracha of Atala. The question is, are those two separate things? In other words, there's a kiyam of hadlaka. There's a mitzvah of hadlaka. Hadlaka saner. And that he was Yotze. Because it's a ner shel Chanukah. However, The Mechayev that's forcing him to relight is that there's an additional obligation to be mefarsein the nes, and that he did not fulfill. So because he wasn't mefarsein the nes, he has to go back and light it over again. But not because he has to create an Ner Chanukah. That aspect of the Chiyev he fulfilled. And that's what you make the bracha over. The bracha is on the Maisa HaMitzvah of lighting a nair. So Sof Kol Sof, he fulfilled that. See, that's the question. If we say that he didn't fulfill the mitzvah at all, because if it's not Mefarsayim, then there's no kiyum of just the Hadlaka per se, so then you have to do it over again and make the bracha. But if you say that there are two distinct kiyumim, one is a kiyum of mitzvah Hadlaka, to be Madlik, and he was Madlik, and the Mechayev is not the Hadlaka. Not because he's lacking in the aspect of the Halacha. But the Mechayev, to relight it, is that he didn't fulfill the Chiyev on the Gavra to be Mefarsim the Nes. So then he wouldn't make the Bracha. Because the Bracha is not for the being Mefarsim the Nes. The Bracha is for the Maisa Mitzvah of being Madlik. Put that in because what the Ba'arei Mitzvahs Chanukah he bichtei lahodos ulahalil Hashem. Says the Rav, getting back to the paragraph, Beis. V'chein din hadlokas haneiros, haneiros hukiyam shel hala voda. Now we understand that. That the entire kiyam of the mitzvah is praise. Because that's Pirsumei Nisa. Pirsumei Nisa, as we said, it's not just a fact. We're going to tell you that a miracle took place, because you need to know that fact. Pirsumei Nisa is a form of Shevach Lashem. B'chol kareinu elav, that God responds to us, that God, you know, quote unquote, cares about us and takes care of us and saves us. God saves us from the messes we get into. That's really the case. why is there Chanukah? Because the Jews became Hellenized. It's amazing. I read that book about the Revolutionary War. Did I mention to you?
Yeah, I started reading it, actually. It's amazing.
Yeah, you got it after I mentioned it? Or you had it?
Yeah, you mentioned it. It's amazing how they wrote it that way.
Well, he's a great writer. If you, honestly, in terms of history, he's wrote a series of killing books. Every one is great. I started with Killing Patton, then I went to Killing Lincoln, Killing Kennedy, Killing Reagan, and then Killing the Rising Sun. That was Japan. He just has a way of writing history. That's the way it should be taught. So, then Killing England. So, you see yourself. I mean, but then I couldn't help but be struck by the similarity between the American Revolution and the Hasmonaim against the Greeks. I mean, this, you know, superficially at least. Obviously, it's a whole different phenomenon. Because we're talking about the Yeshuas Hashem. As far as the Hashkacha element in America, we really don't know. I wouldn't just dismiss it. Because we see in retrospect, you see the tremendous role that the existence of America has in terms of the Jewish people and in terms of the world. You know, freedoms and so on and so forth. No, but I'm looking at it in practical terms. And it's really a miracle I mean, in the colloquial use, it's a miracle that they had they win against Britain. It was a superpower of the world, and there was no real army. And Washington wasn't that great of a general militarily, but he's what kept the country together. So it's really it's a fascinating story to make the comparison. And the main thing is that they weren't just fighting against the British; they were fighting against the so-called loyalists. Those were Americans who were loyal to Britain, just like the Maccabees were fighting against the Hellenists, the Jews, and against the Greeks. So there's a lot of similarities over there. I'd have to know more of the details and so on and so forth to make bigger points about it, you know, categories. So it's very, very interesting. But this is the idea. The idea of Pirsumei Nisa is Shevach and Hodaya. So that's why he says, V'zeo shekosav HaRama Matzar Lehem, Da'am Achayiv Shel Amir Zahalal Hu Kishenegolam in Atzara. And that explains the word. In other words, the Machayiv of Halal is when you're redeemed from the Tzara. And that's why the Rama used the word Ma'od. So let me just close on this note. So what about when the Holocaust ended? So was there a chiyuv to say Hallel? Now, in point of fact, we don't. We don't observe Yom HaShoah in a halachic kind of a way. Although shuls make up programs and so on and so forth. But it hasn't found its way into, you know, a full-fledged halachic formulation, except on Tisha B'Av, where it becomes associated with all the other tragedies that we commemorate. But why not? I mean, you can't imagine a bigger tzara than that. So when it ended, why not say Hallel? In other words, I don't know that there was a geula. It ran its natural course, and Hitler was defeated. Had nothing to do with saving anybody. It was saving the Jews. He, you know, he overreached. He made his mistakes. He took on Russia and the United States and so on and so forth. And as a result of that, he was defeated. But there was no geula for the Jews. It wasn't as though some force was gathered and they were fighting against Hitler in order to save the Jews, and Hashem helped them, and the Jews... that's not a geula. It ended. It ended for other reasons. But the... Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, there were points where it seemed that Germany was, you know, had the possibility of winning the war. You know, like, both sides, you know, had different fluctuation points.
Well, that's true. That's true. But that doesn't mean there was a geula. I mean, right. Germany lost the war because of, Hitler, on the one hand, you know, his qualities and so on and so forth led them, you know, as he was coming up, he had tremendous elements on his side, surprise and so on and so forth. But at a certain point in time, you could see that he changed. And, you know, that's the pattern of all of these, egomaniacs. And then he began to just believe in himself. That he didn't listen to the generals anymore, and he overdid it, took on much more than he could possibly, and it was just inevitable. You know, you said militarily, it wasn't like a miracle that he was defeated. It was just a matter of time after he made certain moves. He could have, had he, well, it's true though, I have to think about that some more. There's books on that, written from a Jewish, right? The Hidden Hand, are you familiar, is that what you're talking about, Moshe?
No, I'm just reading different historical accounts. I don't know about that one.
No, he did. I mean, with some brave. What killed him was Russia. He got bogged down in the Russian winter. He came very, very close to capturing Stalingrad, Leningrad. You know, like, had he done that, had he conquered Russia, then it would have been a different ballgame. So maybe. But again, it's not really a geula in the sense of the Jews, because nobody's fighting for the Jews. That's just a factor as to what happens to Hitler.
It almost seems like the Jews themselves have to play a role in the geula to show God's hand in things.
Yeah, well, there has to be a geula that there's that you could show that, right, that God intervenes. I mean, like by the Yom Suf, God intervenes. Like by the Maccabees, God, by Purim. By Purim, you know, God intervenes. But simply, the Jews were suffering greatly, but circumstances in the world at large brought about a change in that. That's a different story. That's a different story. It's hard to say that that's a ge'ula. That's just a cessation of the suffering. But not every cessation of the suffering would constitute a ge'ula. I mean, you see that the ge'ula has to have a certain status, certain category.